Okay, so we're in Paul on parenting. This is our fifth and final lesson. So we're going to start with kind of just a little observation. There's a kind of an article here, just an excerpt. And he's making observation just about parenting and the culture. And he says, like the novel or the sitcom, the picture book records shifts in the domestic life. Newspaper burrowing fathers have been replaced by eager, if bumbling, diaper changers. Mm-hmm. Similarly, the stern disciplinarians of the past, in Robert McCluskey books, parents who instruct their children, don't cry, right, have largely vanished. The parents in today's story suffer the same diminution in authority felt by the parents reading them aloud an hour past bedtime. The typical adult in a contemporary picture book is harried and befuddled, scurrying to fulfill the child's wishes, and then hesitantly drawing the line. Okay. So this author has just kind of looked at how the representation of families is in picture books and how it's changed over time, right? Where was one I remember seeing, it was more recent, Llama Llama, right? And this llama cries out to his mama, his llama mama, right? And she's always coming up to help him and do this, right? Just, what do you need? Right, and so he's noticing there's a change. It's very different than 30 years, 40 years, 50 years ago. So what do you think is, like, when he sees that, how is the view, what is the view of parents of our culture right now? It's the real view. And do you think what he's seeing in these picture books is indicative of the culture's view?
Parents are like servants.
Okay, yeah. Parents, they have to serve their kids. What else? It's parenting, this culture view the parenting as a joyful thing.
Well, one of our classic picture books was Know David.
Oh, yeah.
Do you remember that one?
Yeah.
It's kind of about this little boy who basically defies his parents all the time in very creative and hysterical ways.
Yeah.
And the answer is always no, David.
No, David.
So, you kind of see the parent as a scold, right?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Trying to, you know, stop a boy from wrecking the home.
That's right.
Running outside naked, all that stuff.
Yeah.
No, David.
Yep. So they're there to scold them. What else? Guys, remember any kids' books, the parents and how they... We joke about the Berenstain. Did we talk about the Berenstain?
Yeah, Berenstain.
Yeah. Papa was not. We had to edit Papa's dialogue a lot. You know, I'd be reading it. You know, we were just talked about the mother and the father's role, and then Papa Bear like, I don't know, Mama Bear. What do you think? You know, oh Papa, no. And she'd always be like the only parent, and Papa was one of the big kids. So, I mean, there's kind of a push or a reluctance maybe against the former view where the parents were more authoritarian. They kind of disciplined or told their kids that they need to go to bed, don't do this, do this. And why do you think that's happening in parenting? Why is that shift taking place, you think? Any ideas? There's definitely that aspect, I think, right? Because we never seem to hit it perfectly, and oftentimes we want to react more strongly. So, right, jerk the wheel from the right ditch over into the left ditch. Okay. Do you think that we're coming from a time, or what? Do you guys remember a time where we were maybe overly strict, overly disciplinarian, overly authoritarian, where this where the culture is reacting to that?
I think you kind of, we live in a very therapeutic culture where every spanking you received was a source of trauma, is now considered a source of trauma.
Yeah.
And my parents were so hard on me, so difficult, they kind of repressed my individuality. They tried to conform me, and that was just wrong. And so there's just a lot of real cynicism and bitterness towards parents. Mm-hmm. And I really don't know if people in the past were really too hard on their kids.
Yeah.
I just think it's kind of been embellished through the lens of therapy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I would say too, there is a sense in which we are constantly rebelling against the authority of God. And so any authority figure, whether it's in the church or in the government, or there's just kind of been a growing desire, right? And that's always been innately there, to reject and rebel and kind of throw off and spurn authority. And that some of that is difficult as parents, because if you're used to rebelling against the man, right, and just rebelling against authority, and now you're the authority, people don't like to wear that mantle. So what do you think are some, like, what are some effects? Do you guys see any effects of this in the workplace, at school, at church? See any effects of this? Leo, you see any effects?
Just in being in schools and stuff, you definitely see, like, a lot of students kind of want to do whatever they want to because they're allowed to do that at home.
Mm-hmm.
You can't really, like, oh, I'm going to call your mom and tell her that you're doing this.
Yeah.
It's like, the kid's like, okay, do it. Like,
yeah.
Mom's not going to do anything.
Yeah.
Or it's the opposite, and it's like, if a student got in trouble at school, it's the teacher's fault.
Mm-hmm.
There's another view on that where, I mean, they are being disciplined at home, but they know when they go there, their authority is going to be way laxed.
Yeah.
And so that child acts out there too. It's not that they're not being parented at home, but they know they can push those authoritative figures, and they do.
Yeah. Yeah, the differences between authority figures, and I see some too where maybe they have authority at home, but there's no communication between home and the school. So then, if you do establish communication, things change because they're okay. So there's a variety of ways. Yeah.
Or the kid just doesn't know how to do anything because the parent has done everything for them growing up. They just don't have the skills that they need, or they can't handle a difficult circumstance because everything's been gone their way, and if something hard comes up or they fail at something, they don't know how to handle that.
Yeah. Yeah, I read a recent good book. It was talking about instead of in the past, it was prepare the child for the road. It's become prepare the road for the child. Right? Smooth everything out so that my child doesn't have to face any of these obstacles, which makes them more inept at dealing with difficulties and struggles. And, the author was showing, he showed like a 30s or 40s playground. You ever see those where it's like a cliff of death, you know? He's like, this probably isn't good, right? Because you can seriously hurt. And then he showed one where it's, you know, jungle gym, monkey bars. He's like, this is good because you can get a little hurt. And he's like, this is today. And it's like rubber. Everything's like 1 foot tall. And he's like,
yeah.
It's not really that great because nothing bad, like no matter what choice they make, it's all safe. He's like, we went over with safety, kind of that idea.
Yeah.
Well, like the desire to protect your child isn't a bad thing, but it's just that you look at that for the here and now and don't see that it's has long-lasting repercussions if you continue to do this for the entirety of their lives.
Yeah, and that's really key, the desire to protect our children, right? And that sometimes protection is harmful, which goes counterintuitive, right? If we overprotect, kind of ignores the same idea that our kids actually are strengthened through those difficult trials. And so are those strengthened through teaching them and requiring them to learn to do these things, to be obedient. And so it makes them stronger instead of less capable, right? So, and I think question D right here, how is this view likely to impact a child's view of their divine authority? How's that going to transfer when they think about who God is and his authority?
Well,
experiences as trauma,
mm-hmm.
then you're not going to recognize that discipline is for our good.
Mm-hmm.
And God will bring, you know, God will work for good for
mm-hmm.
those who love us. And instead, it's just trauma, and you need to avoid it, or you need to go to a counselor and talk about it,
mm-hmm.
or instead of dealing with it
yeah.
between you and God.
Yeah. Yeah, you'll view trials and difficulty very differently. Mm-hmm. What about just whether you're a disciplinarian or whether you're very permissive of as a parent? How could that give you different perceptions of God's divine authority? I didn't quite make that. So I'll give you an example. So I grew up with a very permissive, pretty much permissive mom and dad, up to an extent, right? And in a very much kind of an approval that, oh, you're a good kid for a lot, for those younger years. And one of those things that I had, so that kind of transferred was my beliefs towards God was that God basically approved of me. I was a great kiddo, you know, like that kind of dynamic. It was hard for me. I didn't experience a lot of the harsh disciplinarian. So I never kind of had that view of God as this harsh disciplinarian. But in areas where I lacked that discipline, it took me a while to learn about God's justice and his wrath because I hadn't experienced that same high standard. You see, I like your parenting that can be passed on to your. Can you think of other examples where maybe if you're parented differently, that might pass on to your view of the divine authority?
Well, if you're used to like high discipline and like law, like talking about like laws and like this is the way it's going to be, then it's very hard to have a good view of grace.
Yeah. Yeah. So the way that you parent, both in how you discipline and how you instruct and your grace, all of that's going to kind of make an impact on the way our kids view God. So it's not just how our parenting affects them for here now, but also what kind of message and what picture are we portraying? We know that the marriage presents Christ in the church, so the gospel, but in many ways we represent God to our kids. So kind of reading through this introduction, it's easy to understand why an increasing secular culture would view authority with suspicion. Secular society doesn't have an answer to who put you in charge and tends to equate authority with domination or maybe power, whoever's the strongest. As a result, parents hesitate to assert any authority. They're afraid they don't know why they have authority or whether or not authority is even good. So this is contrary to the worldview that Paul lays out when he says, every knee should bow and every in heaven and on earth and under the earth and every tongue confess that Jesus Christ is Lord. So Paul clearly believes that God has ordered the world under his authority, and we're going to look at Paul's teaching. So looking at Ephesians and looking at Colossians, and he had this clear understanding of the order within the Christian household. Under Christ's authority, the father leads both the wife and the children submit to both their mother and their father. And this hierarchical structure mirrors God's ordering for the church, which is to be a family of families. And God purposely orders the household in this way so the family will reflect the relationship of Christ and the church. So the family, I mean, just pausing there, the family is really the training ground to learn how to have these relationships in all other contexts of society, specifically in the church. Paul teaches that ordering the family is to be faithful, each member is to know and embrace his place in God's plan. So we're going to look at Paul's teaching. Any thoughts on that before we kind of get going? Alright, we're going to get to, first we're going to go into Ephesians. So if you guys have your Bibles, go ahead and turn to Ephesians. So a lot of rich theology in Ephesians, and as we're reaching the end, Paul is kind of applying and giving them directions. And the context here, both Ephesians 6, which we'll look at first, and Colossians 3 are part of his, call it like a household code. So these ancient households, you had husband, wife, children, and servants. And the codes make it clear that the husband or the father or the master, often the same person, right, is held responsible for the household. And the other members are to submit with every command to the children or to the wife or to the slave. There's a corresponding command to the head. So there's these commands, husbands and wives, masters and slaves, fathers and children. So these commands ensure that the Christian principles taught earlier in the part of the book, they are working their way out in the family. And it's translated to each member kind of understanding their own role. I got a volunteer that will read here Ephesians 6, 1 through 4. Andy would love to.
Children, obey your parents in the Lord, for this is right. Honor your father and mother. This is the first commandment with a promise, that it may go well with you and that you may live long in the land. Fathers, do not provoke your children to anger, but bring them up in the discipline and instruction of the Lord.
All right. So why does Paul address children directly here? Why is that important?
It's their responsibility to obey.
Yeah, they're responsible, right? God has commanded them, right? This is for you kids. That's right. So we see that God does see them as morally responsible. They are responsible to obey their parents, right? Children, obey your parents and Lord. That's definitely, memorize that one, right? And that's oftentimes what we would talk about. One of the first things when we were disciplining them, like, well, what does God say? He wants children. Okay, obey your parents and Lord. So he views them as morally responsible. And what are there's two commands though. What are the two commands? Obey.
Mm-hmm.
And then what was the second one?
Honor
your parents. Okay. Children, obey your parents and honor your parents. Now, in this third question, what is the difference between submitting? So you can see back in 5:22, right? Submit yourselves and obey in 6:1. Why is there a different standard for wives and children? Any ideas there?
The wife is more of an equal, and so you're putting yourself under the husband, mm-hmm. whereas the children.
Not an equal.
Yeah, it's like mm-hmm. they're under the headship of mm-hmm. the husband, but mm-hmm. in the wife's, the submission is you're more of an equal and you put yourself under.
Same thing.
Children are under parents versus the wife is just under God and her husband.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that word submit, we see that word also used of how the son submits to the father, right? Which they're co-equal. Right, they're both God, although we see that role of placing under, even though they are equal in nature. So submit, whereas the children are not able to, right? And it's kind of like, another way I was thinking of it is that the children couldn't, like, really be equal or rebel or have that equality even if they wanted to. Like, they're inherently beneath in strength and wisdom and knowledge and power. Whereas husband and wife, right, she could kind of compete with her husband, but she knowingly and choosingly and willingly submits and chooses to submit and to put herself under. So different standards. So what does it mean when you look at children if they're obeying their parents but also... How is it different to not just obey, but to honor?
Hmm.
Talked about this a little bit, maybe in the past lessons.
Honor's the grumbling, I think, like the...
Yeah.
So
yeah.
They may obey, but they're not honoring
mm-hmm.
the real part of it.
Yep. A lot of times we try and tie them together, right? Obey with a happy heart. So we were trying to teach them how to honor as well.
Mm-hmm.
Other things. Is there ways where maybe... your parents aren't giving you a command, so you don't need to necessarily obey them at a certain instance, but you
mm-hmm.
could still honor them. What are some ways you can still show honor to your parents?
Like
It's a big one.
Not around them, but it's encountering.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Or when you're eating dinner with them.
Right.
Speak to them.
Yeah. How you speak to them, how you speak about them. Right. That's a huge way. And there's a sense in which, yeah, you're seeking to value and esteem them as your parents and their opinion, and their leadership.
Yeah, I think there's even, like, a foolish son is a grief to his mother.
Mm-hmm.
But if you're wise and you fear the Lord, like, your conduct reflects on your parents' honor.
Yeah.
So there's even that element as well.
Mm-hmm. Where you're thoughtful and you honor your parents by knowing that every way in which you act and interact with people
mm-hmm.
is a reflection, especially when you're in the home still.
Yeah.
Is it honoring, like when you're a college kid and you go home, you're not obeying, like
mm-hmm.
setting the table or doing,
yeah.
you know, things around the house, but it's honoring your parents by just getting up and
mm-hmm.
doing the things that need to be done. Is that?
Yeah, I think that when you start to reach that area where you are, it's kind of that gray area in our society and culture, like when are you no longer a child, right? So you're getting into college, you're being more independent, so it's not quite as clear, but yeah, there's a sense in which you, especially when you're back in the house, right, you kind of, okay, I'm back in mom and dad's house, so I'm going to honor them by maybe returning to how I can contribute to the household, love one another. And there's a sense in which, too, the honoring father and mother falls under the broader, we're to honor one another, just as believers. Just the same way as the wives submit to their husbands, we're also just called as believers to submit to one another, to basically lift up and hold above others, ourselves, or to put ourselves, our own needs, under one another. Okay? So there's a kind of, this is in a more specific sense. And there's a promise, all right? When they honor, what's the promise to the children? That it may
go well with you.
Go well with you. And
you may live long
and
prosper.
You may live long and prosper. No, that's the Vulcan. All right. Live long in the land, right? So, all right, some basic ways. How does that work? Why does obedience lead to longer lives? You don't put your finger in the socket.
Your parents are wiser than you.
Yes.
As a kid, you're foolish.
Mm-hmm.
So if you're gaining wisdom, it's going to go better for you.
Yeah. Yeah. Better, and that'll protect you from foolish, dangerous mistakes. Any other ways?
I mean, I'll just be honest. Like, when kids just chafe against their parents' wisdom
mm-hmm.
just to prove something, it really doesn't go well with them.
Yeah.
But if they actually submit to their guidance, because they obviously have gotten this far in life, you know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
There's just, I mean, it's available for the taking if people will do it
yeah.
and honor it. And whether it's making the wrong kind of friends,
mm-hmm.
Doing activities that you shouldn't be doing,
mm-hmm.
Not getting a job.
Right.
I mean, all those things that parents, you know, they're always telling me to do this. Well, there's a reason for it.
Yeah. Yeah. Or even as they're getting older, whether they should be dating or who they should be dating, whether this person might make a good spouse, right? Those are some pretty impactful decisions, right? That honoring your parents, listening to your parents could lead to longer, more go well lives that will go well with them, right? So I know people that later in life as adults they look back and see, I kind of threw off my parents' wisdom here and it didn't work out as well. Who was the king, the young king that he was advised, right? If you do this for the people,
Rehoboam,
they'll love you forever. And it's like, okay. And then he goes to his friends. What do you guys think? No, scourge them. Didn't end up well. So when Paul, in verse 4, right, whom does he address in verse 4 and why does he single them out?
Fathers,
right? So he does say fathers. Why does he single out the fathers? Why doesn't he say parents?
Because God's placed them in authority over his family.
Yeah. But both of them do have responsibility, right? Mm-hmm. And so he's kind of saying, right? I want you to be leading, and I want you to know that you're, and I think partially too, and I thought about this a lot, when you think about the curse, and how it happened, and how, right, the man, she led me astray, and there's a sense in which men can be tempted as part of the curse to withdraw and reject our leadership and abdicate our leadership. And so in a sense, I think it's important that God does call fathers and say, listen, you are responsible, right? Whereas you need to take a lead. I think in some families, it can be a challenge where the wife and the mother wishes that the husband and the father would take more responsibility, more initiative. And so they're singled out here towards fathers, although both have this responsibility. Other thoughts? Any other thoughts on why fathers?
I think if the mother is to submit under the father, then it's really the father's responsibility to make sure that he's not pushing too hard of her. You know what I mean? Like, mm-hmm. provoking them to anger. So if the wife is going to be submissive, wherever he leans, she is going to
support and be right there.
So he needs to make sure he's leading the right way.
Yeah, makes sense. Right? Make sure the leader's going in the right direction. Well, what does he say to the fathers in verse 4? What are the commands to do what?
Provoke.
Yeah, we got the negative.
Bring them up.
Yeah. Do not. And what was the other one?
Bring them up.
Bring them up. R-I. Right, so don't do this. Do this. Don't provoke your children to anger, but bring them up in the discipline and the instruction of the Lord. So look at this, that verse that says, that part when it says, bring them up. That word is translated in 5:29, for no one ever hated his own flesh, but nourishes and cherishes it, just as, so in the same way as Christ does the church. So what is that picture? What kind of picture does that give you in terms of what it means to bring them up?
Taking care of your own body.
Yeah. I'm pretty particular in taking care of my own body, and well, I should be more particular. Take care of it a little better, but right, I really do care that it, and I don't want to be hurting myself. Right? Anything else? Like your own flesh, just as Christ is the church. Is Christ harsh with the church?
Mm-hmm.
He seems to be gentle and merciful and compassionate, right? Caring for them. So that's how we're to bring them up. And then he also breaks bring them up into what two things? Bring them up in what? Discipline and
instruction.
So he doesn't just say bring them up in the discipline of the Lord, or bring them up in the instruction of the Lord. So he kind of pairs both of those together. So want to look at both. So when we talk about discipline, the Hebrews passage, we've looked at that a few times. We're going to come back to that. Have somebody read 2 Timothy. Want somebody to read that? You got it? I'm pointing at one of you guys.
Yeah.
You got it. Good. And then, Carson, you since I was split. You can get the Hebrews. Okay, go.
All scripture is breathed out by God and profitable for teaching, for reproof, for correction, and for training in righteousness.
Okay, and then in Hebrews?
For they disciplined us for a short time as it seemed best to them, but he disciplines us for our good, that we may share his holiness. For the moment, all discipline seems painful rather than pleasant, but later it yields the peaceful fruit of righteousness to those who have been trained by it.
Good. So, we've talked about this a lot, but like the discipline, right? Some other words you can see there, it was used as correction, right? When your kids are doing things wrong, we need to correct and not just let it go, right? And just hope that it's going to change and wait for them to stop. We have to address it, right? Mm-hmm. Chris and I, we used to think, you know, we'd be so tired of dealing with it, but we're like, well, it's not going to stop on its own, right? We have to just accept the fact that if they're misbehaving, if they're doing some sinful or foolish actions, it takes correction. They're not just going to grow out of it in lessons. So there is that correction. And I would say this is kind of like the weeding element in your garden, right? You're constantly just pulling it up, pulling them up, pulling them up, trying to find these weeds that keep growing. And we talked about the same thing when they're little, right? The younger, the smaller the weed is, the easier it is to pull up. Any other thoughts about discipline, right? What's the objective of discipline, basically, if you had to distill it?
Well, you kind of want your child to be able to not do wrong things.
Yeah. Don't do the wrong things.
Right.
And part of that, too, is like helping them to know it's wrong.
Yeah.
You know, I think there's sometimes where we just didn't ever train them something, and we saw other parents like, oh, kids should be doing that too, and like, examined it more, like, oh, the Bible, you know, that high standard of scripture about how we're to love one another, and we can train them. Like, sometimes our expectations are so low, as maybe from the homes that we grew up in, or for whatever reason, that we want them to not do the wrong things, but also even to know what they ought not to be doing. I know there's a lot of kids at school that I have to tell, well, I know you lied to me, and that's wrong. You know, don't do that. That's not good. Because they're like, well, so? You know, everybody lied, you know.
No.
So part of it's explaining that, no, you shouldn't do that.
I think there's a confusion, too, like, with the fact that we are dead. Like, we are dead. But I think there's oftentimes that parents really confuse that with the training aspect.
Mm-hmm.
Like, we can still train our children,
right.
Yeah. Even though they are,
yeah,
dead in their sin.
Yeah.
So the things that we're talking about can be done,
mm-hmm,
believer, not believer,
mm-hmm,
versus the other fruits that come from the believing aspect,
mm-hmm,
of that. I think,
mm-hmm,
sometimes it's hard to talk to other parents in that aspect of, well, they're dead, they can't do this, and then,
yeah,
like, no.
Yeah.
We can,
right,
still train them as parents.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, I remember we were talking to Luke last night, and he was kind of talking through, I think he's sharing his testimony at the Super Bowl with the kids, and just how a lot of the training that we were doing, and we would say, oh, we were seeing this fruit in a sense of our parenting and changes in life, but we also recognize that that was kind of a behavioral, and it was something that happened in his mind, but none of that was really changing his heart, but it was kind of teaching and preparing and working ahead of time. And so he's like, yeah, I was changing on the outside, but I still love sin, you know, but I was being trained to. So yeah, there's some tension there.
Well, 1 Corinthians chapter 7 talks about how a believing wife or spouse should stay married because otherwise her children will be unsanctified.
Mm-hmm.
And there is a sense where, you know, the training does sanctify them.
Mm-hmm.
It does help them.
Yeah.
It prevents them from making, like if you keep your kid away from cocaine.
Right.
Or crack, right?
Yeah.
It keeps them from addictions and other things that kind of creates a deeper hole for them to dig out of once they do become Christians.
Yeah. Yeah, and it's true in almost everywhere you notice that if you have a person with godly character and behavior, it sanctifies the behavior and the actions of those around them. It's especially true with your kids.
Mm-hmm.
So even if they have this dead, unregenerate heart, right, it's going to change the way they act for the better.
Hey, Scott.
Yeah.
How does consequences play into discipline and instruction? Like, where does that lie?
So,
obviously there's consequences with sin, but I'm more so talking about the correlation of discipline and consequences.
Yeah, so, there's a lot of specifics in terms of depending upon what type of discipline you're giving. So, for us, sometimes one of our children might do something that was particularly foolish, and the consequences might not have been like a spanking, because there wasn't like this direct disobedience, there wasn't kind of this rebellious effort. So there's a few things that played into that, but they're often, for us, correction would imply consequences, especially at a younger age, and often that discipline and the rod was really about establishing the authority to correct. And then what the consequences look like kind of changed as they aged and as they got older. We might say, you know, they're past the age of spanking, and I say, well, that, you know, to correct for this, we're going to give you this consequence. We're going to take away a privilege, or we're going to restrict this because we want to protect you from making that same mistake. It might be that we change some of the freedoms that they've given to kind of so that they can again develop that. So it might be that you add a little bit more accountability for whatever it is that they're struggling with doing, that we want to make sure that they're doing that.
Is there ever not consequences?
Well, I mean, we always talk about how when we correct them, we usually start with the gospel first, right? Remember that there's always punishment for every sin, and that you can pay for your sin, or Christ will. But I think there are times when it's kind of a teaching moment, more than, I think the lack of consequences for me really revolves around when it changes from discipline to instruction.
Sometimes if there's natural consequences, we won't add another consequence too, because we're like, okay, they learn from that, they, you know, that naturally just kind of, they got their own consequence.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and it becomes like, I really enjoyed when the kids aged out of having to spank them, but it actually became a lot more difficult because the issues became a lot more complicated in terms of relationships and how to, it was a lot less obvious, right? When they're really young, it was easy to apply a consequence or spanking because it was just really clear that they disobeyed. Yeah, I did. But as they get older, they can be either, they can hide a lot more, or they can, I don't know, be sneaky, right?
Yeah, I know you kind of talked about snowplow parenting, where you get rid of all obstacles and you smooth the road.
Mm-hmm.
I think when they're teenagers, when they're making like they're blowing off a class.
Yeah.
And you're like, well, the natural consequence is they're going to get an F.
Mm-hmm.
And then you think what that will do down the line.
Yeah.
That's very difficult to, I'll just let them get some F's.
Yeah.
And destroy any prospect of a future. Then they'll learn their lesson.
Let them cut their finger off with that knife.
Then they'll go without.
You'll learn.
Yeah. So how do you navigate that? When do you? When do you just say, okay, these consequences, like, you're really being an idiot, like.
Yeah. So that's a super good point. So I have this conversation with, because, there are kids that they come in and there's no, like, they're failing a class and they just don't get the severity, but the parent never does anything to step in. They fail the class, and many times the next year they're like, oh, I have to take this whole class again, right? I'm a freshman again, you know, whatever. Like, it's a very difficult, costly learning experience. So, like, if mm-hmm. oftentimes the consequences is kind of an increase in pressure sometimes that this is a costly mistake, and I'm going to make sure you don't make that mistake. And so you can say, mm-hmm. instead of doing this, you're going to do this. Right, it's almost like you're as strongly as you can, kind trying to direct them to that right behavior, and they might really fight against that for a while. But you're, if it's important enough to you, sometimes you'll can. And that's where it's like how central and how costly are those things. The more costly they are, and the more important they are, the more pressure and the more consequences you're going to apply, and you look for the low-cost mistakes to let them make those mistakes. Uh-huh. Because then they get some consequences. Like, I might let them make a mistake on an assignment or a test. And, like, so I'll share with you, Luke is in, he's a senior, he's in my calculus class. And we've had a lot of talks. And but so sometimes he might do something and it doesn't turn out the way he wants, and we might talk about, well, you had 5 days to work on this, and then the morning that it's due, right? And so, like, what could you have done differently? And, right, those kind of a talks, and let's do this next time. And sometimes it's about taking more initiative and just saying, well, you and I are going to do this. So it's kind of one of those. But if it's driving, right, and you're like, I'm not going to let you run into that car just to learn a lesson.
Mm-hmm. I think as parents, we also need to be really careful about the consequences that are given, because that can exasperate
yeah.
the relationship and the child, like spanking too long.
Yeah.
Like, or spanking too often.
Yeah.
When you could do other things, because other things are also, you know, like, sometimes knee-jerk reaction as a parent, especially when you think that something they're doing is dangerous and you go too far in the
yeah.
discipline.
Yeah.
Brian would be like, Bridget, that's ridiculous.
But you're like, I'm just saving their life.
I'm also like, but they've done this like this. You know, like, and I've been home with them all day, or, you know, whatever.
Yeah.
But we just have to be careful.
Yeah, we do. We do. I mean, that's part of that realization, is that we need the Spirit, just in all parts of our life, but to parent, you have to parent, you must be walking in the Spirit.
Yeah. So how do you punish teenagers? Because I think this is kind of like, when they're young, it's like, you get the rod,
mm-hmm.
right?
Mm-hmm.
So
I think
so we have natural consequences,
right.
but
well,
then you...
Yeah.
So how do you punish them?
One of the things that we do in terms of punishing, or one of the things you can do, one of the most helpful things, is I think just the ability to say no to things is one of the first places to start. Is that one of the things that they really need and love is to, they're gaining their freedom, they're gaining their independence, and they're going to constantly be wanting to kind of live their own life and make their own choices. But if they show that they're irresponsible in a certain area, then one way you can discipline them is by removing that freedom. Okay, so they're irresponsible with their car. It's very inconvenient, but you might limit how much they can use their car. They're irresponsible or sinful or disobedient with their cell phone. That's a big one at the high school. Right? My mom took my phone away. Right?
Mm-hmm.
You can kind of say, no, you can't use that. You can't do that. But there is a sense in which, and this is kind of the difficult thing, is that, you know, when you, this is kind of the whole trip paradox, right? So when they're born, your authority, I think this is the authority one. And then the influence ones like this. Like, you really don't have any influence on them. There's no real relationship, but you have total authority and control over their life when they're born. And as they age, they kind of gain more and more independence. And as they leave the home and leave out, they kind of lose that authority. And your goal as they're aging is that you're building into them this greater and greater influence over their life. And so it is kind of scary in which, yeah, you can't spank them anymore, right? You can't do the same things. You're not as big as you. They're about, now they're bigger than you are, right? So there's a certain sense in which you kind of can work with the ability to say no, but you also want to depend on the church as well, right? You have brothers and sisters, you have other people in their life that can speak into their life, minister to them, whether it's if they're in the youth group. You can use a variety of sources there as well.
I think conversations are really important, like with, you know, when they're younger, like you're teaching them, like, mm-hmm. no, we don't do that, you know, like, and you can discipline right then, mm-hmm. you know, as they get older, it really needs to be clear, like, and even when they're younger, but we found the older they got, the more conversations needed to be happening about expectations mm-hmm. so that there wasn't exasperation, yeah. or so that I wasn't going overboard and giving them 2 years of discipline for something.
Yeah.
Instead of, but I mean, there were times we did charts, even with like mm-hmm. middle school and high school. Like, you do this, this is going to happen. Like, these are the, and it just keeps everybody breathing a little bit better because mm-hmm. you know what's coming, you know what's happening.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and one of the key things is just that you have to really be persistent because those conversations. You have to be patient with them to change. Sometimes if it's something that's really difficult for them, it's a lot of conversations and being persistently engaged in their life to see it through. Because it may take months or long, maybe a year or more, to deal with a particular issue as you talk through it with them. Things may become more exposed. They may see more sin come up in their life that's leading to this problem that they're tied up in. And they may just, part of that is just, like you're saying, your kids just, they don't know what they don't know. And so it takes them a while to understand why you might be leading them, guiding them, or disciplining them about something where they might not even be sure what they're doing is wrong.
I think one way to kind of discipline your kids is you know, no video games until you get your grade up.
Mm-hmm.
Or no watching sports on TV until you get your grade up.
Right.
And because that's what they do in the real world, right?
Yeah.
Like, if they're on the football team and they're pulling a D, no playing time until you get the grade up.
Mm-hmm.
Or even in the workplace, right?
Mm-hmm.
No bonus
yeah.
this year unless you meet these goals.
Mm-hmm.
So there's things where it's not... it's real world like now
mm-hmm.
it kind of gives them a taste of that.
How do you make that connection though? That's like, we know that, but trying to teach one of our children that is not there yet.
Yeah.
How can we
yeah.
make that clear to them? Like, I mean, if they
yeah.
don't work, they're gonna lose their job. But I mean, we can keep saying that, but they're like, okay, I don't have a job, I don't care. Like,
yeah.
Yeah, good. Okay, but you will one day.
Yeah. Well, I think one way you make it clear is that until they're outside the home, they'll never really be able to, like, verify it's true. And all they'll know is that it's true in my house. And so they'll go into the world expecting that to be true, whatever you've done consistently in your house. So... And I see, you know, the benefits and the curses behind that principle because I, you know, kids come into school or they come into a team and they've been taught that, okay, if I do this, this is going to happen. Or if I do this, it doesn't matter, right? They have all these different expectations. So they always will carry that in. And so if we have this idea that, right, this has to happen in order for this to occur. And if this isn't occurring, then... this isn't going to happen, right? That this is so important, it has to be done first. And so there is the idea, but I do think that, like you're saying, there may not be a time for them really to absorb it until they start to see that verified.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, we put them back in public school just so that could be verified. I mean, is there any, I mean, is that, how, like, setting those situations up to where that can be verified?
Well, also, I mean, one of the reasons why we talked, earlier, the family is the training, right? It's the very first place where they learn where they're supposed to react in all other contexts. So the second one would be like in the church, right? So like I remember we were talking about the training we were doing with Luke at home. We were constantly interacting with his Sunday school teachers, his youth workers to see.
Yeah.
At first it's like, okay, we had this long list of things that Luke was doing. And, we will work on that. And, right, so then we're checking as a team, how's he doing? Did he do this? Did he yell at anybody today? Right.
Did he hit a kid?
Right.
Yeah.
Physical violence. He doesn't mind. He's been converted, right? But, so you've got your home, then the church, and then with the school, if you can, right, work with them and teachers, but help them to interpret and see how they're supposed to react and interact with that authority figure and how their obedience or disobedience, what the results are. So like, and they're gonna learn too that like, not every authority figure in the world is gonna treat them the same way. You know, like that there are places where some people, when they get to the school, they come and they'll act one way in one class and one way in another class. So we're kind of training them to understand through our discipline. I'm going to weed it out. Well, next time it's going to be instruction. I think we better stop here for today. Let me pray for us. Father, I thank you so much for your word. And we reflected that sometimes it seems that there's so little specifics in the direction of how to parent. But there's great wisdom and there's great guidance in your word about how we're to relate to one another as husbands and wives and parents and children. And in the midst of that context, you give us wisdom on how to parent our children. I pray that this class would be a place where we can talk and discuss and think through those options for young children, for elementary children, for adolescent children, for older children. Help us to be parents that faithfully parent and have kids that become obedient and honoring to their mother and their father. And through all of it, pray that you'd receive glory. In Christ's name, amen.